Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast. Another live show, San Remo recap. Just watched the race here in the Flandrian Hotel amongst a, I don't know, I would say a jubilant crowd. We'll get to why they might be jubilant in a second. And yeah, it was a great race once again. As you know, the profile of San Remo, 288 kilometers in starting in some sort of satellite town outside of Milan that paid for it, Pavia. Then they go over the Torquino. Nice weather today, no snow stop before about 100 Ks of anonymous valley along the coast before they hit the Capo climbs, which actually played a big role today. Four of those, the longest of which was the Capo Berta. That's with about 38, 39 Ks to go, that one crest. There's another then 10 kilometer valley before Cipressa, which is about a 9 to 10 minute climb. Still pretty regular, 5.6 Ks, 4%, before another valley, before the Poggio of about 8 kilometers or so. And the Poggio, 3.7 Ks, 3.8% before a short descent that you all know of, the Poggio de San Remo into San Remo. So, wait, who were the top five favorites again? We know it was Van der Poel and Poggi neck and neck, but who were the third, fourth, and fifth? I already forgot.
Pedersen.
Okay.
He was very close. Was Pidcock close?
No, Ganna was ahead of him in the odds.
I think so.
Yeah.
I actually don't know who the fifth favorite was.
Anyway, there's a whole list of riders that could always win, like Moritz, Bling, Ganna. Yeah. Philipsen, and the sprint is a bit longer. The last time a sprinter won this race was quite a while ago, but I guess sort of Van Aert and Van der Poel rewrite the script
was it?
On that.
Kaf Ciolek and?
Is Ciolek really a sprinter?
He was a sprinter at Gerolsteiner back in the day. Am I drunk or?
Yeah, I guess he was. But hey. Yeah, Ciolek 2015. Anyway, the weather was good. We had the biggest breakaway I can remember for a while with every Italian team getting represented. It wasn't enough to have one or two of these guys and they run us through these. I don't know some of these guys, Benji. I mean,
well,
Baldacchini sounds like the name in Inglourious Basterds that they gave themselves when they're trying to get in the hotel into the opera.
Davide Baldacchini, together with Valerio Conti, that name we do know. Kirilo Tsarenko, so three riders from Koratek. It's like every single team decided to get three of them in it. Polti's here as well with Davide Baez, the GOAT, Mirko Maestri, and Andrea Pietrobon. I'll be honest with you, half of these people I've never heard of. Tonelli and Zoccarato for Bardiani, and we've got a Movistar rider here, Samitier, Combo for DSM, and then Germani for Groupama. So that's a breakaway. Just, it feels like it's a teams where you wouldn't expect them to be the favorites for this race anyway. So that's logical. Wildcard teams, but also Groupama with Germani, so that's pretty cool. But I gotta be honest with you, I want everybody who is listening to this podcast to comment whether they watched this entire race or not. And I bet most of the people watching probably didn't watch this entire race because, yeah,
I mean,
it's that break. 11 riders up the road, and it's up to Vermolte, Dillier, and Mosca. Jacopo Mosca.
He and Dillier pulled the most, especially Dillier for Alpecin. They had the big favorite. UAE, they didn't really bring any rouleurs. The late changes was they brought Del Toro into the race. And then we forgot to mention that. There was a lot of talk before the race. Maybe they listened to our pod and they're like, maybe sub 9 minutes is possible. Great idea. On Cipressa, there's a lot of talk about Machin's done the calculations. Sub 9 minutes, that's the sweet spot on Cipressa. Del Toro comes in for maybe an Oliveira brother. And I'm thinking maybe they really are going to do this. Like they brought in about six climbers. But that means they got about 0.5 rouleurs with Novak.
I will say, I 100% believe that sub 9 minutes is possible on the Cipressa.
I think so too, yeah.
But we'll get into why that did or did not happen a bit later. First of all, that breakaway is up the road, but let's talk about our personal training first, right?
Oh yeah, this week, we didn't regale everybody so far in the room and everybody listening at home about this week. But yeah, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we did every major climb in Flanders, including the Koppenberg, Paterberg, Quarmont, which was fantastic to do. And that was thanks to Join Cycling. They had a training plan, the classics training plan, which I input the data. the kilometers, the elevation, and my time until I was doing it this week, and it spat out exactly what I needed. And I got through this week actually really easily, which I'm really happy about, off the back of, I trained pretty hard and I stuck to the plan, but it wasn't crazy. It was a reasonable amount that I was comfortable with.
You're flying up the Koppenberg, but people will see that in the future.
I will win the Koppenberg Cross next year. If you do the joint training plan and put it on max, it will just let you win the Koppenberg Cross. That's what, at least
I'm not sure
that's what I think. But if you want to get 30-day free trial, no credit card required, go down to the link down below, joint cycling training plans, and after that 30 days has expired, you can get 6 months at a discounted rate. It's worked for me, and I'm already hearing from a lot of you, you're enjoying it, the adaptability, the flexibility, and setting it for your level of cycling. Thanks to them for sponsoring our Sanremo episode.
On to the Capis. That's where the next part of the race starts in Milano-Sanremo, and the Melo is the first one. There's also one in the middle, the Cervo, which I feel like I napped through that one today. But the action already started from the first one, the Capo Melo, because UAE took the front almost immediately with Novak. And like you said, they don't necessarily have the rulers here, but I wouldn't expect a ruler to pace on that those copies anyway. So I'm fine with Novak doing that. They want to make the race a bit harder so that they can smash it on the Cipressa and might or might not get a sub-9-minute Cipressa. We'll see. Then,
but he was crushing.
The group was doing well.
Normally on the Capo, right, it's... Yeah, there's a big rush in for position because, okay, 50Ks to go. Let's get serious. We've all been napping for 6 hours.
Yeah.
Get in position, but you still see them wide.
Yeah, but it's still
not in a line normally on the Capo.
You're right. Everybody has been napping up until that point. Then some people kept napping because on the Berta, there was one rider dropping that shouldn't be napping, and that was Laporte.
Christophe Laporte, yeah. Obviously not having a good day at all. You wouldn't expect him to get dropped there, and even... You wouldn't expect him to drop so hard on the Cipressa if he'd been there with the size of the group later. So he clearly, something was not right with him today. Also saw Christophe going backwards for Uno X, and it was clearly a decent pace in terms of just the way the peloton was looking. Novak was smashing, and you also looked at the face of the UAE riders. First thing I noticed was Hirschi in the draft, fully protected. Hirschi was gurning. He was like fully struggling, and I was like, they've got their order wrong, or he's on a bad day or maybe it's not a dot pro race, so like he loses 50 watts. I don't know, but I was like, they look good, but also they're in a line, eating a lot of wind. They're going 40 kilometers an hour, and there's a lot of guys in that train not looking too fresh.
But the additional point to that is that, yes, they're already riding at that point. Novak's already riding, but to get to that point, to get to the copies in first position, you don't need to have a perfect ruler. But that changes the second you need to go to the Cipressa. And in the run into the Cipressa, 27Ks to go, that starts. Then we're thinking, are they going to be able to get to the front again? And going into that climb, quick step Ineos EF across the roads. They're leading. Ineos starting to pace at the foot of the Cipressa. And I was thinking, where are the UAE boys? Because they disappeared after the copies. And that's where they lag that ruler. That's where they lag that ruler, because then eventually they do come to the front posts. Everybody with Del Toro, with Pogacar in the wheel. And I was like, where's the rest then?
They did this last year. This is what they do every year. And it's like, remember Grosschartner had to come up about 50 positions. And like, you're not going to set, by the time he gets to the front, how's he going to lift the pace? And is that a function of Novak, they shouldn't have used him on the Capo? Or did Ulisi and Hirschi not perform because they were nowhere?
Or is that because you don't have someone like Paul to get them in position in the first place? That's how I see it personally.
Agree,
because I see them lacking a ruler here to get them in position. What would you rather be? A six-man train that doesn't get in position, or a five-man train that has a ruler to get them in position in the first place? Yeah. I'd rather be the last.
For sure, because these are not that hard of climbs. To repeat again, like, position is about 50% of the battle here, in that if you have to come up in the wind on the open side and you're a good climber because you've been put in the team because you're a good climber, well, yeah, by the time you get to the front, you've just done like 500 watts. And now Poggy's on the radio saying, I need you to keep doing that for another 2 minutes. You can't do it. Whereas, yeah, as you say, if you put Pollitt, puts you in good position. And Pollitt is in unbelievable form. Like, Pollitt, I think, gets over the Cipressa today. Pollitt is flying.
That could definitely happen. But also, I would like to say Del Toro did well today. Like,
he's
been impressing this entire season, from Tour Down Under to, was it Tirreno? Yes, it was Tirreno, where he got fourth in GC, if my mind. is remotely correct, but him hard pacing here, him being the only one in position is kind of shocking to me, because I at least expected Wellens to be closer, expected, well, here she, I think like was, you said, not a pro race.
Covey might have been the first guy, because it wasn't an Oliveira here, but you could immediately see what they thought they were going to do on the Chipressa was not going to happen, because the first 2 minutes just went all wrong. And because, yeah, Quickstep and Trek are like, we're not going to launch the Chipressa. Like, what's it to us? So, but you're right. Del Toro was really, really good. And then, but then you're looking at Del Toro, Wellens, Poggi. Poggi can't, like, I made a big fuss and song and dance about going on the Chipressa, but being realistic now with the way they've set it up, I thought, no, there's no way now they're going to go on the Chipressa because the group is too big.
Yeah, and you only saw Del Toro at the start, and then eventually Wellens gets to the front as well.
Yeah.
So you've got two riders in front of Poggi, and the rest is just kind of not there, which means that you're going to run through those riders too quickly. And if you're going to burn Wellens here, you're also reducing the impact he will have on Poggio. And it felt weird because when Del Toro, after like 2-3 kilometers, is my guess of pacing, he basically dropped and Wellens was at the front. And there was a moment where he didn't immediately start pacing, right?
Well, he can't. What's he going to do? Pace from Chipressa, do the whole descent, do the valley.
Well, and then on the climb itself still.
Yeah, but I think... like the plan, I think the plan was for Poggi to attack on the Chipressa.
I think so too.
I think it was.
Or at least reduce it significantly to have an impact.
Because they must have been like, Poggi must have, I think he said, abort mission. No, he must, like, what is he going to do with just Wellens there? So they decided, I have to just, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
Get to the top of the Chipressa, big group. And you think, oh, they can't have done it that fast. Calculated at 920, 930 Chipressa, I think. That's still really quick, like one of the quickest Chipressas ever.
Like Formula 2 years ago?
Yeah, it was a really quick Chipressa still, and yet the group was huge.
Yep.
Like the group was still 50, right? Or maybe not, 30?
I would say it's between 40 and 50 riders would be my guess. There were some splits towards the end, but that's going to come back anyway. Even though that descent of the Chipressa, once again, highlighting, that's a Niccolo Bonifazio descent.
Okay.
I'm gonna keep it that. That's his name now. But anyway... I feel like last year there was action there with Van der Poel already mingling in affairs. And this time it happened again because it was first Trek coming to the front, right? I think it was Schoens
with Pedersen and Sturve.
So we've got that 2-3 riders of Trek trying to launch. I think it was 2 riders of Trek. And then eventually Van der Poel comes through and Pogacar was behind riders. He then has to come around those riders. And eventually he's like close. I reckon another UAE rider joined him as well because they were P4 and P5 in the descent. But while this is happening, the gaps were not necessarily any major gaps. We're talking, okay, there's a half a second there. There's a second there. If it was flat, it maybe be a few seconds, but it's descending. So it's unlikely this will really make a difference.
And also there's like Moritz there. Like there's Trentin, there's Tudor guys. It's too big that these guys will go full throat of death to close. So I thought, okay, Trek would be nice if you do something. Van der Poel was very active though. Poggi was right there, and he wasn't really reacting on the Trek guys and what they might do. And Van der Poel, I think Van der Poel's race sense is unbelievable. Like, he already could see 3 Trek guys. I'm not going to let them play with us on the descent and go away with 2 Trek in the valley, even though that's not really going to do anything. So he closed that immediately. But we've not talked about the breakaway.
Yeah.
I already forgot. The breakaway was on the descent. And so... it was Davide Baez, Samitier, still from Movistar, a Yolo Cometa guy.
Polti.
Is that their change?
Mate. Yeah, Polti Cometa. If they had a name or leaderboards of saying the correct name, you'd have 0% accuracy right now.
I never get Cometa right. Is Cometa like a Hungarian sausage company?
I have no clue, dude.
Well, yeah, so I don't think it is. I just made that up. But because they always get like a couple of Hungarian, they have Feta,
I'm cramping.
Eric Feta. Anyway, Benji's cramping, and maybe other riders were coming back. This is what happens in the live show. Comes back, and it's like, this is completely, I feel like we were watching it, and everyone was reacting in the moment with the race, like, this race is not what we expected. We thought 10, 12 riders with UAE, and then it's a group of 70. Group 2 comes back, Plappy is like... I've been chilling at the back all day. I don't know what all the fuss is. He comes back in the national champs jersey and you've got like full trains again, like an old style Milan San Remo. You've got old style San Remo. Suddenly Davide Baez goes with This was not on my bingo card. Post depressor pre Poggio, Davide Bice anticipates from the group. And like Pidcock's like, you know what? It's a great time not to move to the side of the road, in the middle of the road, just to start peeing on camera. Like literally just starts peeing.
Tom Pidcock.
Yeah. Tom. And I was like, at least he's relaxed. And Ineos were looking good. So to run through who was there. Ineos with Ganna, Narvaez, Pidcock, and Kwiatkowski. Groupama FDJ with Kung and Pithy for sure.
Yeah.
Trek with Schoen, Sturva, and Pedersen. Alpecin suddenly have numbers.
Yeah.
Appear on every monument. I think MVDP is on his own. And then suddenly at the right moment, three of these horrible Jean Shorts jerseys appear. And I'm like, who is that? And it's Philipsen. He's back as well. So big group. But UAE again, Benji, it's just Wellens, right?
Well, Hirschi was kind of...
Yeah, Hirschi sort of.
The jaw was back. He was there on the flat segment before the Poggio pacing a bit. So that was happening. But we knew it was all going to happen towards the Poggio, eh? Who's going to get in position on that Poggio? Who's going to be in the right position? Is it me or having the last 2 years of Milano Sanremo in the positioning towards the Poggio? If you're looking in the POV of a rider, the train that is on the right of the peloton always made it on the Poggio first.
Yeah. They do. I think Ineos usually get it pretty right. I think they were a little bit lackadaisical because...
What does that mean?
Just like laissez-faire. We're not in Wallonia. Laissez-faire. Like relaxed, too relaxed. You know, they were sitting at the back, but then there's the washing machine effect. FDJ started driving. Nonchalant, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And Pidcock and Ganna don't really move up in time. They do, but a bit too late. Vanderpool's in good position. UAE weren't right there. I'm pretty sure EF. No, they entered Cipressa in good position, but Bettiol, big race, big game. Bettiol was here. He was in good position, but I still already thought, I was like, how is Poggi gonna win?
Yeah,
because he has Wellens, just Wellens, basically. Like, yeah, and he pulled Bice back, but it's not enough.
Wellens already paced on the Cipressa before, so he's already shot one of his shots. So anyway, we get to the Poggio. And it's Tudor that comes out on top when it comes to the positioning game.
Tudor, the last month. Unbelievable.
Trentin in second position. I won't lie. I don't know who it was in first. So if it was Luke sitting
Luke
here, he'd
say
probably
Rick Plumas. Rick
Michael
Zeilhardt. Yeah, or Zeilhardt or Plumas, but it was probably Meyerhofer.
But anyway, that positioning is great. And then you see who else is in position. Okay. Ganna looked good at the start of the project, but there was like a moment where he suddenly have to like, I don't know what happened, but he lost positions there.
Yeah, it was... Ganna really struggled with position today. Like, I thought he had really, he had good watts. Like, Ganna, he looked shit the last couple of weeks. He lost a TT by 1 second, but also the other stages, he's not looked as good as he did last year before this race. And I even said that in the preview. I was like, comparing to last year, not as good. But then today, I think he might have even had better legs than last year. Like, but his positioning was a real struggle. Kwiatkowski moved Pidcock up in time. UAE, they're waiting. And I was looking at them like, you want to be on Poggi's wheel. Because Wellens is right there. They were waiting on, I don't know, maybe Trek. We're doing not a soft pace, obviously, but they're not trying to drop everybody for Pedersen. And like, Wellens is going to do a lead up. So you want to be, and he's going to do it relatively smooth. So you want to be on Pogacar's wheel. It's a Movistar rider, Gonzalo Serrano. They let him take the wheel. I'm like, guys, do not let him. He's going to drop the wheel when Poggi attacks.
They let him get the wheel, but the man was fighting for it.
Yeah,
he was struggling with his bike and with himself, but he got that position and he fought for it. So deservedly, Van der Poel was P5, P6, I would say, trying to move up in that initial segment. Then he got into a proper position, got close to Pogacar when it mattered. So that's the thing. But I think for the first part of this project, I was like, okay, Wellens can't lift the tempo again. His tempo from when... Usually the Wellens lead out is a ramping phase, like exponential growth of tempo until he pops. And...
But he looked cooked. He was slowing down. And also it flattened off. It was where Nibali attacked, right?
Yeah.
And he's just on the front. And you see the group is... There was like a mini split where someone dropped the wheel, is coming back. And whereas last year, that was where he was accelerating and Trentin dropped the wheel.
Yeah.
And this year is the opposite. It's coming back at that point. And I was thinking, this is looking good for a Vanderpool counter. Because Poggi still has to go. But now Vanderpool's back
in
position.
This entire climb, I was thinking, this is starting to look like an outsider will win.
Yeah, because it was so much again, the numbers are going to say they went really fast. It was like probably the fastest Sanremo ever. But the way the group looked, it looked like a softer Poggio or like a less explosive Cipressa than we expected. Less explosive Poggio than we expected. And yeah, Poggi goes, Bettiol's right in position. He's holding the wheel easy. And so that's where you're bringing in, Benji. It's like if Bettiol's holding the wheel on that attack easy.
Yeah. Well, Bettiol's been good recently.
Yeah, yeah. But that means that then Pedersen should be good enough to be there soon.
Yeah.
Blin can be there. He was looking good. Ganna, Pidcock, Ganna's just murdering back.
Yeah.
And so now we're looking at a group of, it was kind of like the Ewan one. It was a
the Ewan one. What do you mean?
When he could have won, when he half-wheeled Wout, when he should have attacked in 22 maybe. Like it looked.
Man was just trying to survive, man.
Nah, he was flying. Poggi sort of accelerates again. Van der Poel, I'm already forgetting. Was that, there wasn't the big Van der Poel counter, right?
No, there wasn't the big Van der Poel counter. And you got to think further than just Van der Poel there, because in P9, P10 in the group, who's there? Jasper Philipsen. His sprinter is there.
That was crazy.
And the fact that he's there, first of all, fucking amazing performance.
Yeah, yeah.
So very strong from Jasper Philipsen to be there. Yes, it's not the most selective Poggio so far, but to be in the top 10 riders there, that means he's in very good condition. That's number one. Number two, the fact to me that we don't get that real counter from Van der Poel looks to me that he's aware that Philipsen is around. He's aware that Philipsen is around and keeps that in mind, that if he attacks, the climb might be even more selective, which might lead to Philipsen not having a chance at all to compete here. So that's an added layer there. And man, to see Philipsen there, really impressive. Because like, we haven't spoken about it. Kort was holding on the Cipressa quite well. He fell through on the Poggio, but he was also really strong. So I'm like, in a few years, if he can grow up a little more, well, not physically, but potentially, then he might also be able to compete for a Milan-San Remo if the similar scenarios keep happening.
Yeah, and you have to have maybe someone like Van der Poel on your team, but eventually Poggi goes again, and this was probably his best timed attack in quite a while. Well, definitely, I think this was his best attack in a San Remo so far, where Van der Poel's on the other side, Van der Poel was asleep, and he actually gets a gap before the top, but it's really close to the top. And then you see Van der Poel just go not so fast and like just zooms back to his wheel. They come through the left-hand hairpin for the descent and Van der Poel's already in the wheel.
Yeah,
and
so, but you're going through that attack so vividly, but the way it was seen on TV, that was great coverage, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
When Pogacar had a gap of, what was it, 20, 25 meters and Van der Poel had to come around these riders and had to close that meter by meter just before the descent corner into the descent of the Poggio. I was like, Come on. Is he going to close it? Is he not going to close it? Is he going to close it? Is he not going to close it? So far, this race had been pure entertainment from the bottom of the Cipressa, I would say, which is when you should start watching Milano San Remo or at the foot of the Capis.
No, the Capo, yeah.
Yeah, don't forget the Capis.
Yeah.
But I will say, I had no clue who was going to win this race.
I thought Van der Poel was going to win easily because they've gone clear. Poggi is full commitment relaying, like not protecting for his own sprint at all.
Yeah.
And then Ganna is on the front of group. Ganna was super strong, but then on the descent, he was so bad.
Evaporated.
He was so bad on the descent. He missed every corner. He was in the wrong gear every corner. He was getting dropped. He got dropped from the group on the descent. I don't know if he had a mechanical that happened to Nizzolo a couple of years ago, but he was bad on the descent. And so I thought, well, if Pogacar's going to work with Van der Poel, why wouldn't Van der Poel relay with him all the way? And then also, I feel like Van der Poel's descent was bad. Every corner, I don't know if he was trying to look back for Philipsen. I don't know if he was, I also thought, is he laying off? So when they get to the straight bit where Cancellara attacked, he wants to run into the wheel. But he just didn't look that good on the descent. Eventually, Pidcock bridges to them on the descent, which he had,
that was impressive.
He had to do, and he has the skill to do. But Pogacar was doing a pretty good descent, but he was still like attacking out of every corner. Pidcock gets across to them, but it's too late. He goes ahead of Van der Poel, who is dropping the wheel, but then the descent's finished. Pogacar stops, and this is the Sturva moment, right? This is the Cancellara Sturva moment, and this is where the outsider can win. And there's one man who knows, feels these moments, and it's Moric. And he just runs onto the Via Roma with like twice the speed of everyone else, looking at that motorbike, saying, I want that draft.
I feel like it took too long for a second there. Yeah. I expected someone to attack earlier than Moric did. Like,
I thought
sprint
Pidcock
from the
would.
Draft, as people are stopping, that's when I expected the timing to be. When Moric went, Van der Poel didn't switch immediately, but it took him like 1-2 seconds before he went to the front. Well, he stayed at the front and just started pacing. And I wonder if that is related to the fact that Philipsen was just catching on at that moment as well.
Yeah, Philipsen, the sprinters normally can do a pretty good descent. So maybe he was trying to figure out where Philipsen was. And even in real time, I hadn't really clocked to how much Van der Poel was thinking about Philipsen in this race. I thought Van der Poel would ride for himself and attack on the Poggio. So we get to the bottom. Moritz goes. A group forms of Bettiol, Van Hills, Sturver, Alaphilippe, Pidcock, Sobrero, Matthews, Pogacar, Pedersen, Bettiol. And there's full commitment from Van der Poel because Philipsen's in the group.
And from Stuyven for Pedersen. So
yeah.
Deserved credit there. Those two are riding for their sprinter in the group.
But if they weren't there, Moritz.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wins.
Yeah, but we got to talk about the fact that we are skipping not just Mohoric, but Mohoric, yes. Mohoric gets caught. Tempo stocks.
Yeah.
And who goes?
Sobrero.
Matteo yeah. Bloody Sobrero goes off the front. He gets a bit of a gap, but it's like it's a controllable gap. And then Tom Pidcock decides to try and use that as a bit of a jumping board. He's like, that's my certain Kronersen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he jumps to the wheel and he jumps over the wheel. He attacks Sobrero. Sobrero can't hold that wheel. And at that moment, I was like, is the line close? Because Pidcock has quite a gap. But
yeah.
In the background, you see one man trying to control the group behind, and it was Mathieu van der Poel.
Yeah, this was under the Flamme Rouge. You had Sobrero clear in San Remo, and it's through the left-right downhill
yeah.
where Pidcock
went. Say,
yeah, where Turgy went and came second. So it was close to the line. And then van der Poel, we now have the answer. How can a sprinter win San Remo still? Have Matthew Van der Poel be your domestique after the Poggio. It's just that easy.
I
always say, just guys, if you want to win San Remo, just have Van der Poel as a domestique. Straightforward. And so, yeah, Van der Poel closed it down. And then Trek begin the lead out to the left-hand side with Sturver for Pedersen. I think I was like, Pedersen, this is a good chance. This is going to be one of his best chances ever to win San Remo. Who knows how Philipsen is after two massive efforts like that. Bling comes out of the draft. So Trek, we're trying to go into Pidcock's draft on the right. Bling jumps Pedersen already. Pedersen doesn't have much snap. Bling goes to left barrier, fully opens it back up. And then Philipsen's on the wheel of Bling. And he's like, I can't go right because Bling opened back up. And then he commits left in the space. Bling starts to close it back and then reopens it. He doesn't fully, he did reopen
relatively
it.
Close.
Well, he had to reopen it.
He nearly elbowed him back to Milan.
Philipsen still got through, so there was enough space.
It was I'll take it.
More
take
space
it.
Than Philipsen leaves other people sometimes. So Philipsen comes through and nails Bling on the line to win San Remo. I don't even think I really mentioned Philipsen in the preview. I didn't. Because I just thought it'd be all for Van der Poel. And a crazy result. And really, that's why I love this race, because Philipsen wins ahead of Michael Matthews, Tadej Pogacar, the Monaco hug boys. And then Pedersen fourth, Bettiol fifth, Moritz sixth, Van Hills seventh. Nice result for Lotto. Sturver eighth. He was very good. Alaphilippe top 10. Van der Poel 10th. Pidcock and Sobrero 11th, 12th. They deserve better for their performance. But yeah, really exciting finish.
Very exciting. Alaphilippe, by the way, had a puncture in the last kilometer. So he was sprinting with a back wheel that was sliding all over the place. So credit is that he's still top 10, to be honest. Others might have been like, oh, man, put their bike on the side and walk to the finish line. So
Fabio Jakobsen.
Every Quickstep sprinter ever.
Yeah.
Anyway, very good addition. And I think it really lands the point home that a race where outsiders are still in the running is so much better than a race where someone is so obviously better. This is such a stupid point. It's obvious.
No, it is. It's true. It's like Moritz could have won.
Yeah.
If MVDP doesn't fully
commit.
Sobrero could have won. Pidcock could have won.
Moscon could have won.
And it's like, could Sobrero win Liège? I mean, maybe he improves, but Sobrero's not winning Liège against Remco or Poggi.
Glad you ignored that, by the way.
Well, I don't know where Moscon finished. They haven't updated the results for the last 100 yet, I don't think. I don't know, who did I pick to win? Van der Poel. Well, he only came top 10. Not very good from him. But that's why it's such a great race. And maybe Roubaix is a little bit like that. But when you look at the Tour of Flanders, you think, well, the strongest is probably going to win. Lombardia, the strongest is probably going to win. Olympics, I think it's going to be between Van der Poel, Poggi, and Pidcock, Van Aert. So, well, and Remco.
Olympics, you don't know because
weird races.
They're weird races, and they're riding with all limited teams. Like, every country is there with 4-3-2-1 riders. So who the hell is going to control the breakaway of the Olympics? I'm very curious to see that. I'd literally go in the breakaway if I was the leader of a team.
Yep. No radios. But Jasper Philipsen, so just a note on him, this guy who in 2021 was crying on the side of the road on the Champs-Élysées after missing out and coming second about five times in the Tour de France, now has 6 Tour de France stages, 3 Vuelta stages, points jersey, a bunch of other World Tour wins, Brugge de Panne, Eschborn, Frankfurt, and now one San Remo.
The Belgian ChatGPT race in there.
26 years old, out of contract. You can see his agent at the finish line being like, holy, what a day. they just announced him, what a day, this guy. Let me get that little trek or bore a checkbook out.
When Jasper when his agent was talking in the media about a week and a half ago during Tirreno, when Jasper Philipsen won a stage but wasn't looking very dominant, like, well, that would that take by the agent would have landed a lot better if he was dominant in the race. But I think that agent is definitely rubbing his hands together right now.
Herrera's always in the mix zone. He's like with the press. Yeah. Like, remember when Philipsen finished the World Juniors? Yeah. He can do what he wants. But yeah. Philipsen wins. Albertsen de Koenig without Van der Poel still win again. Bling, I want to give a shout out to my countrymen. Do you think Bling, you know when he opened it back up?
Yes.
If he'd gone another half foot and blocked him and
then
wins,
Philipsen might have crashed. Would have crashed.
You reckon Philipsen would have crashed himself to get through the gap?
Philipsen definitely would give everything to win.
Yeah, he'd probably put the shoulder in. Because that's what I was thinking. I was like, this is the ultimate test case for sprint deviation.
Oh my God.
Will they relegate someone who's just crossed a monument? Oh, he did it with Alaphilippe in Liège. But he didn't even cross the line first. He came second because Roglic won. Will they relegate a monument winner first across the line because of the sprint deviation?
They should. Yeah, well, not in this case, but if Matthews wins because he barriers Philipsen, obviously he should be relegated.
Not fully barriers. I'm just saying that
Pogacar would win. That's how Pogacar wins MSR.
Like what Philipsen did to Van Aert in the Tour de France stage last year. Yeah. He didn't put him into the barriers.
Yeah, but that's also partially because the organization put that corner there.
Yeah, well, they shouldn't have had the straight there today. Bling should have won.
As a Belgian, I disagree.
Yeah, actually, this is not a good day for me, seeing a Belgian flag ahead of us. Second
La
in Port a monument.
Dropped on Berta. Oof.
Still, I think Jayco are going to be pretty happy with second in a monument. I think they'll be pretty happy with this result, and Bling also could have won. So, yeah, good on him for not closing it. If he did, maybe he even wins this race, and it would have been a bit controversial. But Philipsen was the deserved winner, because if Bling, you could say, oh, well, he's stupid. He should have gone left and gone to the barrier straight away. If he goes left straight away, Philipsen would have come out on the right-hand side and still won. So
I think we need to hammer on the point that the fact that Alpecin went to this race, despite the all-out favorites being Van der Poel, Pogacar, knowing the qualities of Philipsen and playing into it actively with Van der Poel, daring to make
racing
that bet.
Negative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
it was negative. Yeah.
Passive racing.
Yeah.
I think that shows balls from the team directors, but also that shows the team cohesion and people management within that team is on point.
Also, he's out of contract.
Yeah.
And he's not the superstar. And they race like this. So that's really, really impressive.
Pretty good superstar these days.
Philipsen, but Van der Poel, he pays that team's budget.
Yeah.
And so it's really, really impressive. And a lot of teams wouldn't have operated that way. They would have said, no, we go for Mathieu. And Philipsen, if you come back, you come back. But maybe the plan was, okay, after the Poggio, if it's a group, you go for Jasper, which does make sense. So really, really exciting race. Pidcock, I was cheering for Pidcock just because, again, a different winner to see him break through. But he tried his best. Ganna's descent was just too bad, and they needed probably two guys in that group. They needed Ganna to be doing that Moritz Sobrero attack, maybe.
Yes. Question now. Jasper won Sanremo. MVP worked for him, basically, or rode for Philipsen here in the final. Roubaix is upcoming at some point. Obviously, RVV's all the way Van der Poel.
Yeah, yeah.
Roubaix, they were both in the split last year, and they were both very strong.
Lucky.
I wouldn't say that was lucky. That was a very good performance by Philipsen. Yeah. And I'm looking at the next Roubaix and I'm thinking they're probably going to play them out both again.
They have to.
Yeah, and at first I was going to ask the question, oh, does that change the dynamic now that Philipsen has won? Does that make it so that Philipsen works for Van der Poel there? But I don't think so. I think it's just tactically you're going to play it out depending on how the race forms. Because if you're in a group and you see that Van der Poel can attack and Philipsen can sit in the wheel there to have another person try pull back Van der Poel, that's a perfect situation you're in.
Yeah.
I think everyone in Roubaix, at least after last year, everyone would have been scared of Philipsen anyway. He came second and dusted Van Aert in the Velodrome. But Pedersen probably a little bit disappointed not to finish on the podium. You know, it ended up being a sprint and he had a domestique, a lead out from Stöver, which was a pretty good lead out. So I think he'll be disappointed with that. It was a good opportunity. And Pogacar in UAE, Benji, where did it go wrong? Wrong plan or the riders a lot of the riders weren't good enough? Wellens was good, but Novak was good, but a lot of the guys today, I don't think, performed well enough.
Failure to position at the Cipressa.
Yeah.
And secondly, some riders didn't perform as planned.
Yeah.
As hoped. Because if you put out a plan, that plan is hoping your riders can perform to that level. And sometimes that's not happening. And today that was the case. So it's not much else. Well, they tried a plan. It was cool.
But it
failed.
But then there's no real backup plan.
Yeah, there's no real back. Well, the problem is if you need to use Wellens on the Cipressa, you're destroying your backup plan already. So the second Del Toro and Wellens were at the front on Cipressa with all the rest way behind, it's very hard because if you're Pogacar in that sense, do you know how close the others are? You know where Hirschi is in that group? Is he coming up? You don't know. It's like you have to make a split second decision, and the team car definitely won't make that decision in that moment because they're a bit behind, their TV's behind. Like, I think we're talking about the difficulty of switching to that backup plan in that situation.
How does Pogacar win? Like, could he have won today?
Yes, if Matthews barred Philipsen and he got DQ'd and Philipsen.
Oh, Roglic style.
Yes.
Yeah. But next
otherwise, he couldn't have won today unless they on the Cipressa. Bullet positions, five riders from UAE with Pogacar in the wheel. They smash it.
They do a TTT and let the wheel go or something.
But then it's still not going to be easy.
Yeah. Luke's told me that Gannis had a mechanical in the descent, so I'll stop slandering him, but I think that's...
Well, you weren't wrong that he was there descending badly.
That's a convenient excuse for being in too big a gear out of the hairpins. but yeah, it was a great race. That's why I love it. Any last thoughts on San Remo?
I'm not 100% certain, but I think that was the fastest Poggio ever. 5:39.
Fastest Poggio ever?
Yes.
That's what's crazy because
it didn't look that fast.
That's what I mean. Like, that's what is so strange about this race. Like, we're saying, oh, UAE, like, they were shit. Like, they didn't really execute the plan. They did a slow Cipressa, but then they did, like, a 9:25. And then Poggio, well, UAE, they didn't let Pogacar in the hardest position to attack, and then they do the fastest Poggio ever. I don't know if it was tailwind.
I'm not 100% sure, but that's what I read.
Yeah, it was the fastest San Remo ever, I think. So
yeah, well,
maybe
it's also a very short one compared to the other one. So it's 288 kilometers instead of like 290 plus.
But still, it's just literally not feasible to go fast on the Cipressa. But then you see the size of the group.
It is. I disagree. I think it's possible to go under 9 minutes if you're positioned perfectly and you have the riders for it.
Yeah, and heavier guys, I think. I think you need 70, 75.
Sign me up, UAE. I'm ready.
Yeah. We'll pitch us. Yeah. We'll probably, we get a UAE
stagiaire. I might not get to the chip. I won't even get to Turquino.
UAE stagiaire contract. That I think pays better than podcasting.
Not sure about that.
UAE, man.
I don't know. Depends.
We'll see. There's a salary cap. You know,
I'll ask Guerrero as my agent.
You know, they voted yesterday. Apparently in 26, there's going to be salary caps.
Yeah, I've noticed that. And
why did the CPA agree to that? Do they know that salary caps mean the riders get paid less?
I think that's a discussion we need to have on a weekly.
Yeah, okay, weekly show. We'll save it. That was our San Remo recap. Incredibly exciting. We got a long time until Liège-Bastogne-Liège. Oh, no, there's... sorry, I skipped the cobbles. Jesus.
you are in Flanders. You literally just rode the cobbles. You're in Flanders. You're in the Flandria Hotel, and you forgot the cobbles. Sorry, but RVV, Roubaix,
okay.
Dwarsdorf-Flandern with... Yeah, mate.
Glasgow, Vlaanderen, come on, get the...
Visma Lisebike is sending their RVV team.
Be serious. Okay, in 2 weeks we got Tour of Flanders. In 3 weeks we got Paris-Roubaix. But that's all from us. Thanks for listening as always. Thanks to the live audience. And we'll see you in the next one. Till then, ciao.
Selling a little or a lot?
Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.